You're listening to The Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. Up next, JX senior producer Natalie Golay offers a collection of short news features from around our region.
I'm Natalie Golay. From March through September, an unusual set of restrictions are put in place along some Oregon beaches. No kites, no drones, only leashed dogs, and no walking in some sandy areas. The rules are meant to help a small beach nesting bird that was once under Endangered Species Act protections. KLCC's Zach Ziegler reports that those closures appear to be helping the snowy plover recover.
Jacob Caldwell is driving along the wet sand of a 5-mile stretch of beach south of Winchester Bay, an activity he does two or three times a week for his job as a beach and trails ranger with Oregon State Parks. He's checking on areas where the U.S. Forest Service has closed some of the sandy upper beach so snowy plovers can nest. Among Caldwell's duties is making sure people know about the small birds.
Especially people with dogs, or if you see those through hikers, we'll just let them know, hey, based on the direction you're going, you know, you're going to run into a plover area, and just kind of give them that heads up.
He keeps plover egg replicas handy so he can show people how small and camouflaged they are, like the birds they'll grow into. He's also keeping watch for trash that's either washed ashore during the last high tide or was dropped by beachgoers. And he also watches for dead sea life that needs to be removed.
When marine mammals wash up, especially deceased ones, in these plover areas, they can attract predators. Predators are one of the biggest deterrents or detractors from the plover's population success, especially crows and ravens.
Before we can enter the official management area, we see portions of the beach that are marked off with yellow tape, closing the area due to the plover nests.
But that's kind of encouraging that they're getting out of the management areas and they're actually nesting on the open beach.
That encouraging sign comes after decades of work to protect the birds. Laurel Hillman is an Ocean Shore Resource Coordinator with Oregon State Parks. She says the birds' populations dwindled in the 1960s and 70s, causing it to be listed as threatened in 1975.
Following that, there were surveys done, sort of started in earnest in the early 90s, that documented as few as 50 adult plovers in Oregon.
She says one of the biggest reasons for the shrinking number of plovers was loss of habitat, as Oregon's beaches were taken over by European beach grass and other invasives.
There was less room for people to share the beach with plovers, so that was one of the main reasons that led to their population decline, which was the loss of their habitat on open sandy beaches of Oregon.
According to Hillman, the plover population in Oregon now tops 500, and the most recent West Coast count revealed that their population tops 3,000, a recovery benchmark.
3,000 birds is a major milestone for the plover because that's their recovery target. Now we just have to hit it 10 years in a row.
But, Hillman says, despite the chance of being delisted in a decade, the closures may be with us for longer.
The reasons that they're threatened is the loss of beach due to increasing non-native species like the European beach grass.
Back on the beach, Jacob Caldwell has reached his turnaround point, 10 Mile Creek. Outside of a little plastic, some buoys, and a small drum labeled fuel power conditioner that was both empty and sealed shut, it's been a calm morning on the beach.
Nothing to report back to the Forest Service. No vehicle tracks or signs of people where they shouldn't be, so when there's nothing to do, it's kind of a good day.
And limited wildlife. We did see some sandpipers, seals, a bald eagle, and Velela velela, small jellyfish that washed ashore in abundance this spring. But no plovers to this point. Then, at one stop, he points towards the protected area.
Oh, hey, right in front of us.
Where I catch a quick glimpse of something moving in the sand.
So I think that's a male. That little black band on their forehead and then like on their collar is more pronounced during the breeding season.
While spotting one plover does not a recovery make, this year's count would lend some proof to that anecdotal evidence. In Winchester Bay, I'm Zach Ziegler reporting.
House of Danger calls itself Portland's preeminent queer wrestling variety show. It happens once a month at Swan Dive Bar and was born out of a love for wrestling and a need for people to practice with. OPB's Lisa Wood reports.
It's a Wednesday night in the East Portland Grand Avenue Historic District. We're in a 130-year-old building that currently houses the cocktail bar Swan Dive. Up the creaky wooden stairs on the second floor, a sold-out crowd anxiously awaits tonight's spectacle.
I have been a performer in Portland for almost 10 years. I started getting into wrestling a couple years ago, but I found that I didn't really have enough people to practice basics with.
That's Clancy Kramer, one of the founders of House of Danger.
I didn't have any dreams of putting on any shows. I asked my friend V if they would like to help me find some people, and the rest is history.
Me and Clancy used to practice wrestling moves at Peninsula Park. We would lay a little tarp down on the grass and practice every single Tuesday evening. That was the inception of this, and slowly more and more people got involved.
That's V Lay, Kramer's partner in House of Danger, who also wrestles under the name The CPA. Yeah. They wrestle and do taxes.
Every single wrestler is queer or trans. I've performed in every single one of the matches, and it's just really fun to come up with your persona, really like nail down a performance, and get to know so many people through this community. It's been super awesome.
Queer comedy and drag are pretty common, but you don't often hear about queer wrestling. Kramer points out a direct line between the two.
I think a lot of people have made the point that wrestling is drag, like factually. Drag as an idea is the overt performance of a gender. I'm not a huge fan of sports, but I enjoy athletics. It's like a sport, but we are all on the same team. There's a winner and a loser, air quotes. Yeah. But if the show was a success, we all won.
The freedom Kramer and Lay have to produce House of Danger makes it different from other wrestling events.
I think that there is a lot more space to do some of the wilder ideas that I'm sure that regular pro wrestling, if they're gonna do queer storylines, it's usually a joke.
The wrestlers at House of Danger take their personas and storylines seriously. Kylie Karma is the champion who is determined to hold on to her belt. She sports a pink sparkly outfit, similar to a figure skater. Ursa Rager is just getting his footing in the real world after being raised by bears. Putadora has never wrestled before, but she's here to defend her cousin, Princesa Payaso, with her whirling maces and space buns. And don't discount Vigo Volante. You may think you can take him, but he didn't get the name the Italian Stallion by losing.
All right, are we ready? Ring that bell! Six competitors entering the crucible of queer combat. Alliances will be made, hearts will be broken.
As the wrestlers prepare for battle, the ring assistants set up thick black wrestling mats in front of the stage on the floor. They're just a few feet from the audience. There's no ring, no ropes, just a brick wall and a padded post that, if they're lucky, they'll avoid being thrown into.
Introducing first, your World House of Danger champion, Kylie Karma! From Portland, Oregon! The Taxman Comet! The one, the only, CPA!
There's a love triangle between the trust fund baby, Cash Coyote, the CPA, and Kylie Karma. Tonight, they're not just fighting for the championship, they're fighting for love.
My name's Ethan. My stage name is Vigo Volante, or the Italian Stallion. I'm fighting everybody today.
We are about to see a new competitor enter. 10,
9, 8, 7, 6, 5.
Vigo did say he'd be fighting everyone tonight.
Ursa absolutely having his way with Vigo. In fact, Valore. When a fist hits your eye like a big pizza pie.
Half of the wrestling takes place down on the floor, grappling style. Kicks and throws are stylized. Nobody's getting hurt here, but they are working hard.
Kylie Karma has shown to be absolutely surgical. Cash Coyote will absolutely do whatever it takes to bring home the win tonight. Kylie Karma regaining control.
Kylie Karma will take the championship.
Kylie keeps her belt, and as she basks in her win, she gets one last surprise. She whirls around to find the CPA down on one knee proposing marriage. There may not have been a wrestling ring, but there was a ring for Kylie's finger. We couldn't hear the proposal, but Kylie's answer was clear.
She said yes! She said yes! She said yes!
At a time when it feels like many beloved queer spaces have closed their doors, Clancy and V have made space for something new.
There was an audience of people who did want to come out and see this and experience this, but didn't necessarily want to enter the spaces of pro wrestling. They feel scary. They aren't. But I think having queer in the title makes people feel more like, oh yeah, I can go to that. That's safe.
Practice your cheers and jeers. All are welcome in the House of Danger. From Southeast Portland, I'm Lisa Wood for OPB.
A massive Ice Age ecosystem shared by Oregon and Washington is coming to light just north of the Oregon state line, where crews have spent 15 years unearthing mammoth bones near the Tri-Cities area in southern Washington. Along the way, people have made a lot of other discoveries. NWPB's senior correspondent Courtney Flatt went out to the dig site.
Wind whips through wheat fields and Coyote Canyon on the outskirts of Kennewick. But this spot is home to more than just crops. It's also the site of a glacially paced mammoth dig. Every year, people can tour the site or volunteer to help dig.
Which is way cooler than just seeing a skeleton behind glass at a museum.
That's Neil Mara, a research assistant with the site. Today, a gaggle of third graders from Pioneer Elementary School in Sunnyside tour the site. This is where bones of a Colombian mammoth were found in the late 90s.
Whoa!
That mammoth died 17,500 years ago. It was likely swept here by massive Ice Age floods. Gary Kleinkonect is the site's education director. He says this mammoth is different from what the kids are probably picturing. Kleinkonect shows them a painting of a mammoth.
What's missing?
The fur.
The fur, yes, the long hair.
Also, this Colombian mammoth is way bigger than its woolly cousin. A cardboard cutout of its left hind leg is at least 10 feet tall. Just imagine the tusks.
One of those tusks weighed 200 pounds.
200 pounds.
Big tooth.
That impressed 9-year-old Cormac Newhouse.
Mammoths, some of them were bigger than elephants. And like, they're taller than my dad.
When they're not giving tours, volunteers catalog all sorts of tiny things buried around the Coyote Canyon mammoth. Lizards and beetles and rodents. Bax Barton is the site's research director. He says mammoth bones are everywhere. Around 50 have been found in Benton County alone. But this site is helping look at the bigger scientific picture, instead of what often happens to mammoth bones.
Oh, look at the trophy that sits on the mantelpiece or on the professor's office desk and never gets studied. But it's a great paperweight, you know.
He says most scientists don't have the time to look further. At lots of dig sites, landowners want the bones out of the ground as quickly as possible. That way they can keep right on doing whatever it was that led them to discover the mammoth bones. That's not the case here. The landowner has given them all the time they need.
We're beginning to slow down and take a look at the bigger picture for these animals.
Like learning more about the climate and how that changed over time. Other scientists can reach out to study what's been cataloged and preserved. At the dig site, the kids look for tiny bones. But these come from owl pellets, not anything important to the site.
Here we go.
Mara dumps a bucket of dirt onto a super fine mesh screen.
Okay, listen up. We're going to spray water on this dirt and we're going to turn it into mud. And then we're going to reach into the mud with our hands. We're going to stir it all up.
The kids squish the mud through the mesh. What's left are bugs, rocks, and tiny bones.
I found a bone!
That excitement is catching. Mara says every day at the site is an act of discovery.
Boy, doing the digging, it's such a cool thing. It's like opening a Christmas present. You know, you never know what's underneath that next shovel full of dirt.
And there are still a lot more shovels full of dirt to go. Barton says this dig could keep going for another 5 or 10 years. I'm Courtney Flatt in Kennewick.
Wait, there's what? I found a bone. I found a natural bone.
That's it for today's exchange. I'm Mike Green. JeffExchange.org is our website where you can find these conversations and more, or you can subscribe to our shows wherever you get your podcasts.